Hello and welcome to this special science podcast from the 2011 AAAS Annual Meeting in Washington, D.C. It's February 20th. I'm Robert Frederick. In this short podcast, we'll hear about California's biomonitoring program and the concerns in reporting on umbilical cord blood contaminants to mothers. Science's Eric Stockstead spoke with Rachel Morello-Frosch of the University of California, Berkeley.
Rachel, I wonder if you could just tell us first what biomonitoring is.
So essentially, biomonitoring is the testing of human tissue for chemicals or their metabolites to assess the level of exposures that people are experiencing. So you can test blood, urine, and other tissues.
So what's changed in California in terms of how you do that research with participants and what they end up knowing about what you're finding?
Well, I think what's changed in California was that in 2006, the California legislature created the California Biomonitoring Program. So much as CDC has its own biomonitoring program where they release reports every 2 years on chemical exposures in the U.S. population, California will eventually be able to do the same thing. And one of the unique things about California's program is that the law requires that participants who are sampled in that program do get their personal results if they want them. And so I think that has shifted some thinking among researchers about the need to communicate individual results back to study participants in a way where I think researchers in general used to just report aggregate results in the peer-reviewed publications, but weren't necessarily returning results back to individual study participants.
Are there any issues involved or complexities with giving people the results of what you're finding, especially if it's emerging research?
Yes, actually there are a lot of issues for reporting back chemical exposures in humans, particularly in biomonitoring. One of the big issues is that biomonitoring technology has gotten really good, where we can test a larger number of chemicals at lower and lower levels. But the problem is that our capacity to detect and find chemicals has preceded our ability to really understand what that means for people's health. So we have a lot of information about chemicals in people, but the question is, how do we report that back to individuals in a way that's meaningful and doesn't create worry and stress because we are not necessarily in a position to tell them what it means for health? So that's probably the largest, I would say, scientific and ethical challenge that we face in terms of how do we do results communication in a way for study participants that's useful and not worrisome.
It seems like you have, you know, possibly even in larger concerns beyond worry, if, for example, you tell a nursing mother that you found chemicals in her breast milk when we know that breastfeeding is healthy for infants. So how do you go about handling this? What do you do to figure out what and how to tell participants, how to put that information into context?
So the breastfeeding issue, I think, is probably one of the big concerns, I think, that public health people and environmental health people have about when you report back results. Is it going to create so much worry that moms might discontinue breastfeeding or cut short their time breastfeeding because they're worried about passing on chemicals to their infants? And there hasn't been a lot of research on this question, but the research actually that has been done looking at breastfeeding behaviors has found that women who get their results and who understand the scientific uncertainties about what those results mean actually don't change their breastfeeding behaviors. So I think that should be reassuring to researchers who are thinking about whether and how to report results to participants that people can understand that results come with a certain level of scientific uncertainty and that that doesn't necessarily have to indicate a radical shift in behavior or that people are even willing to understand that maybe as an individual they may not have a lot of control over their exposures.
So you've been involved in a project in California with biomonitoring research. What have your experiences been in terms of what people want to know who are participating and how you go about telling them?
Well, so what we're doing in California is, in addition to recruiting women to test them and their infants' umbilical cord blood for chemicals, is we are coming up with protocols for how we communicate results back to the participants by getting feedback from our participants themselves. And so we've been piloting prototypes with hypothetical data, asking them to go over the materials, assess how well do they understand the messages that we're trying to convey, what they like, what turns them off, and whether or not they would use these materials in any way in terms of taking action. And what we find is that women really want their results, even if the health implications for them personally is ambivalent, and that they feel that at minimum that information can be useful to them to take action as an individual in terms of maybe being careful about the kinds of products they use in their home, whether it's cleaning products, personal care products, but that also they're interested to find out more about the fact that chemicals don't necessarily come from those big industrial smokestacks outside, but they can also come from products that we use and bring in our homes every day. And so that kind of information people are interested in. They also want to be able to compare their results to those of other participants in the study. That gives them a sense of, am I high, am I low? They appreciate, for example, if we can give them a national average to which they can compare their results. Another meaningful comparison is, do other pregnant women have the same levels or higher levels than I do? And finally, the most ideal sort of gold standard that participants want is, can I compare my result to some kind of health benchmark or level of health concern? And unfortunately, in most cases, we don't have that information because most of the chemicals that have been registered for chemical use have not been adequately tested for human health effects, so we don't have that kind of benchmark.
So are these studies invitation only? What, if anything, can a person who wants to know what their own levels are for some of these chemicals, what can they do?
Well, right now, yeah, these studies are very small pilot projects. We're recruiting, you know, very small cohorts of people, so we're recruiting specific populations. But I think ideally what we want to create and what I think CDC is looking to create are biomonitoring programs in states that are sampling representative samples of the state population to get a profile of what environmental chemicals diverse populations are exposed to, and any hints that that might give us in terms of sources of exposure and what we can do about it and what the implications may be for the health of people either in California or in other states as well who are thinking about creating biomonitoring programs.
Can you give us a quick sketch of what you see as the future of this field? Will it expand to more clinical testing or independent labs offering tests?
I think right now it's interesting. There's quite a backlog in the labs that have the capacity to analyze a broad array of chemicals and at the levels of detection that we like to see. And so that's why often it takes so long to get results back because labs have a lot of backup. So I think right now what we're looking at in the future is increasing the capacity of states to have their own laboratory capacity instead of having to send it to the Centers for Disease Control for analysis. And I think it's possible that maybe industry will start investing in these kinds of things just as industry has started to invest in genetic testing as well, although I think that remains to be seen.
I don't know if you've tested yourself, but have you learned anything or made changes to your own lifestyle as a result of these tests?
I have yet to test myself. I have not had an opportunity to do so, although if I were given one, I would definitely do it because I think it's good for scientists to go through that process themselves. The only thing I've ever tested was I clipped a piece of my hair and put it in the mail and got back a mercury result. So things that I've changed in terms of chopping my way out of the problem is, you know, avoiding certain kinds of personal care products, really not using any kind of pesticides in my home at all, and being careful about the cleaning products that I use in my home because I think you can do a lot of things very effectively without quite such toxic products. So I think there are a lot of things that the individual can do. But I also am very philosophical because I realize there are a lot of chemical exposures over which I have no individual control because I can't read a label. The ingredients aren't always on the label. I can't buy a piece of furniture and avoid flame retardants, for example. So I think it's important for people to have some perspective and realize that fundamentally, if we want to deal with the issue of chemicals exposures and reduce our exposures, we need to change how we regulate chemicals and chemicals policy.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
That was Science's Eric Stockstead speaking with Rachel Moreau-Frosch of the University of California, Berkeley, about the concerns in reporting on umbilical cord blood contaminants to mothers. This has been a special science podcast from the 2011 AAAS Annual Meeting in Washington, D.C. Special thanks to Kathleen O'Neill for her work on this show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write us at sciencepodcast@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Magazine. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, AAAS, the Science Society, thanks for joining us.